Hey there, coffee lovers. Do you want to make your morning cup of Joe something special? Let's talk about Joe Bean Coffee, a gem right here in Rochester. I'm Chris Lindstrom, host of the Food About Town podcast and co-founder of Lunchador. I've been a longtime fan of Joe Bean. Kathy, Dina, and the whole team are passionate about their coffee and this city, and it comes through in every cup of Joe Bean Coffee that I brew at home. Joe Bean has been a part of Rochester for years, over a decade, building lasting community and a sense of belonging for everyone who loves coffee. Next time you need beans, head over to Joe Bean's Roastery at 565 Blossom Road in Rochester or shop online at joebeanroasters.com. Even better, subscribe to Joe Bean's Perpetual Joy and you'll receive freshly roasted beans on your schedule and never be without your favorite coffee. Joe Bean is more than just coffee. It's a community, a commitment, and a cup full of care.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening. Going back a couple episodes, I said that we had gone long on one topic and then jumped into another topic and there just wasn't time for all of it in one episode. So now we are revisiting the content that we had cut from the previous episode in this episode. And we're going to be talking about a topic that we've covered before in sensory science. And as I was listening to the episode and starting to edit it, I realized there are a couple things that maybe we should clarify in advance. The first is what a Q grader is, and we actually have a couple of episodes on this previous, especially listen to episode 4. In episode 4, we talked to Janine Melnick, who is a very accomplished coffee professional and is a Q grader herself, so we couldn't ask for a better perspective than Janine's. And so I'd encourage you to go back and listen to that if you're curious about Q graders. Q graders, essentially professional coffee tasters, they are the baseline for how we evaluate what is and is not specialty coffee in our industry. They develop the entire trade language that we are reliant upon. So like I said, episode 4, head back, listen to Janine. She has some excellent thoughts and she really schools us on what it takes to become a Q grader and why the Q system was working. And what you're going to hear in this episode is that the Q system is changing. So really interesting development there. Another point of clarification that I want to make is that in this episode, I make the claim that the affective evaluation on the coffee value assessment, which is what the Q is changing to, is just as scientific as the descriptive. And I brush against this idea of the 9-point hedonic scale, but we don't actually call it out. And so I want to just real quick run you through the 9-point hedonic scale. And the 9-point hedonic scale is something that was developed 85 years ago in mess halls for the U.S. Armed Forces of all places. And it is something that you're all probably relatively familiar with, where there are essentially, as the name indicates, 9 points on a scale of, do you like really dislike this to do you really like this, right? So, and the 9-point hedonic scale is interesting because if you were to go to scholar.google.com and just type in 9-point hedonic scale, you get 128,000 hits. And so there's a lot of scholarly discussion about the scale itself. So it is a very scientific matter. But even more than that, you will find so many tasting related studies that employ the 9-point hedonic scale because it is a reliable tool for determining preference. And so when we're employing this in the coffee value assessment, I want to say that it has a very, very voluminous scientific backing. So we didn't really hit on that too hard in the episode. I just wanted to clarify that. So I would definitely encourage you to look that up as well. And if you want a little more background on the coffee value assessment, this is something that we covered in episode 2. So that was a while ago. It is something that like I'm constantly wrestling with as a roaster. What are the best tools for evaluating coffee and how then I put it out in the world and say, this is what's good about this coffee. This is what's good about that coffee. The descriptive analysis has always been my go-to, but affective analysis is gaining traction. And I think it's, as you'll hear in the episode, I think it's a really good thing. So I hope you enjoy the episode. I hope you check out some of those past episodes for background. And as always, enjoy your coffee.
When we say serious, it's still coffee. So how serious is it really? Like, so we've talked on this show before about the coffee value assessment and the attempt by the coffee world to go from what is a relatively arbitrary 100-point scale. And I say arbitrary, what is a relatively static 100-point scale, what is a based on an inner subjectivity that often gets called objectivity, right? So to this idea of something that just has value in the market. And there have been a couple developments that are especially interesting on this front. I'm going to try to summarize them as quick as I can. In April, the main body, the Coffee Quality Institute, CQI, that runs the Q grading program, handed their operations over to SCA. And SCA immediately said, we're moving away from the 100-point scale and we're instituting the coffee value assessment. And so they've moved away from solely the score. The score still exists in a certain form, and that's called kind of the descriptive score sheet, but they're integrating what's called the affective score sheet. And I want to just as quickly as I can summarize the tone of the criticism of the change. Let me say up front, because I think this could get lost in this conversation, because it's a super technical and highly nuanced conversation. I think criticizing this move is wrong. I'm in favor of this move. And I think I can pose a couple of different scenarios where this is a much better way to evaluate quality or describe quality or move in a quality direction in specialty coffee going forward. But one of the criticisms that I saw came from a podcast called It's Just Coffee, which is a great show and you should watch it. But
sorry, real quick, is this YouTube or was it a podcast?
It's podcast. Okay. But I do think they do a lot of video. Like I
everything
know
is
I
both
initially,
now. Aaron.
Yeah,
I know we're on YouTube now, Instagram, aren't we, Chris?
So, indeed, we are.
Because you adjusted my camera like 5 times.
Is this available on YouTube? That's kind of cool.
It can be. It's not always. We're going to make it more standard.
Cool.
But yes.
I love
it. It's Just Coffee.
It's Just Coffee. Ben Bicknell and Rowan Cook.
Hey, Wade, It's Just Coffee.
It's Just Coffee. They started their conversation with, and maybe they did this partly to be provocative, there used to be a scale. There used to be, you could tell, like, 85 or above was, and then they switched it to 80 or whatever and above. And now it's just whatever has value. And what does that mean? And I'm like, there's still a ton of scientific basis. And I have this book here, The Coffee Sensory and Cupping Handbook, published by the Specialty Coffee Association of America. There's a whole chapter on affective taste, like testing. So yeah. it's still science, right? So like, I think this criticism kind of sucks, but we were sent an email by a Q grader who we know, by the person who that was written by the person who trained that Q grader and really ripped into the coffee value assessment from these standpoints: too unwieldy and time consuming, dispenses with the intuitive, valuable, and widely understood 100-point framework, which again, like, that's not the only way to be intuitive about these things. Measures human responses to a coffee rather than the coffee itself.
Ooh, I got a take on this.
That's true. But what are we evaluating a coffee for if not to sell it to humans? Subjective underpinnings allow for abuse when it comes to sample approvals for contracts in the trade.
Yeah.
Can you parse that out for me?
He's essentially saying that, like, if you like a person and you know you have a sample from their farm, you are going to find ways to make the value assessment fit the sample. Predominantly, sure, by doing the affective testing and saying, like, I really like this. But, and therefore make the thing look better than it is because you like the person. That's the main, I mean, like,
well, let me real quick before we move on there. But like when I looked up my research for this, there's four categories, right? For this evaluation.
Yes, but they're only using two for the Q now. What only about the descriptive and the affective.
So they got rid of the intrinsic value category there.
Yeah, yes, yeah.
See, and that was what I highlighted because I think you're right. Like, if you know, wait, I think your coffee is better than a lot of people's. And I cannot lie and say it's not because I don't know you, right? like that's definitely a factor there.
Right, right, right. If you know me and still like my coffee, that's really special.
Because he's really just a jerk.
Yeah, coffee's pretty good.
It's when John Cena comes after me, I think a lot of people who don't know me or my coffee. No, I'm just kidding. But I think that like, so I get where that comes from, but way to call your whole industry unprofessional. Way to assume unprofessionalism on the part of people who are pursuing excellence. A trade language and a way to value things that are, I mean, they're worth a lot of money to a lot of people. It's a like way to say this whole multi-billion dollar industry is so unprofessional they can't be trusted with this thing. This thing that like, again, like, let me get into some of a little bit of the science behind this. And at the end of the day, it does lay the onus on the SCA to like prove it a little bit. But what you can do with affective analysis is you can use some of the objective measures. So a study is described in this book where they correlate preference with TDS and descriptive analysis.
Okay.
So with these three different points to correlate, they find that people who like a higher TDS, so what we would recognize in the industry as a stronger coffee, like chocolatey, nutty, roasty flavors. And people who like a lower TDS, so something that's not as strong, like floral, fruity, and like more herby flavors. And so in a way that's intuitive, and if you've been if you've been serving coffee long enough, you kind of know that. But now we can scientifically kind of back that up, right? Like when you brew a coffee a little bit weaker so that a little bit broader range of flavors come out and you get some of those fun florals and fruit flavors, you're going to raise the preference of a certain subset of the, right? So like
that makes
right. Makes it's intuitive, sense. But now we have the science to back it up. And that's what affective scoring can do and affective testing can do. And so I think I want to pose, I think it's best summarized in one kind of situation that I thought of that could happen where descriptively on the descriptive sheet, coffee, like these tasters could say, this coffee has a good balance of acidity, sweetness, and body. This coffee has, you know, it meets all of the criteria of the old 100-point scale. Descriptively, this is a good coffee. And then affectively, they all don't care for it. That could happen. There could be a big, broad difference between what coffee professionals like describe as a quality coffee and what coffee professionals describe as a quality or a coffee they really enjoy.
I think they can and in many ways should be separated, having done blind judging on things I don't like that are made well for what it is.
Good examples of the product. I think one of the first conversations I had with Ben Turiano that really like sent me into like how do we think about quality was he asked me is like, do you think we can recognize quality in things we don't like? And I'm like, intuitively, yes, those are two different things. But what does that tell you? That's useful information.
Uh-huh.
If I'm looking at a CVA score, high descriptive, low affective, highly trained coffee professionals don't love this coffee, but it's a quality coffee. Guess what? that's probably a coffee that has a very broad appeal. That's probably a coffee that I can use in a lot of my staple blends. Like, that tells me exactly where that coffee fits in my program, I would assume, yeah. Right? And I still have to taste the coffee for myself, but I'm very much more likely to try that coffee than something that's like high descriptive, high effective, because like these nerds, which I am one, who are tasting these coffees and loving them, are probably looking for things that the general public
is not
looking for and won't play as well.
Almost by definition, when you get more into anything, you are going to like niche stuff more.
Right.
And sometimes you'll spring back to going normcore on whatever it right. is too.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, you tend to get more specialized. You tend to get more, you know, more niche in your interest because you care hard. And that makes the most sense. Like when I'm judging, if I'm judging a category I don't like I'm judging anisettes, right? I'm judging, why am I forgetting green drink that is anise? Absinthe.
Yeah. Absinthe.
Yeah, if I'm drinking absinthe, I don't like absinthe. I never drink absinthe outside of competitions or if I happen to be at a place that specializes in it. I never order it on purpose except for in those situations. I still need to be able to judge it qualitatively that this was made well, it was balanced. You need to understand what is quality in that. And then I can then say I don't like it. But the other thing, like when we're judging coffee liqueurs, I can say clearly this coffee is not good.
Right. What instant coffee did you use for this?
Right. I can say, oh, that's a coffee profile I don't like, but it's not faulted. And I know most people are going to like this. Well, those are also very different things, which is exactly what we're talking about.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah. This is also exactly what happened with LVO's almost. When you were working on their coffee blend, they wanted something that they liked a lot. You weren't producing bad coffee for them, but it wasn't what we liked when we tasted it the first couple times.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Some of the darker roast stuff.
Yeah. Arriving at kind of their Euro roast. Yeah.
Yeah. And they knew exactly what they wanted and they really enjoyed it. And that's great. It's an important thing. And I think it also shows that, you know, when you see people going there and enjoying it, you're like, yeah, that is the goal.
Yeah. They burn through it. So abstracting quality from preference and then correlating the two actually tells me more.
Yeah.
And I think like we're just being giant babies and resisting change and ignoring a field of science that's a little harder to understand, because like when you get into this study that they talk about that I was saying correlates those three things, it requires so much background in kind of like statistical regressions and things like that. And like
I was thinking of that right away.
But then the SCA puts that on themselves. Like the biggest thing I'll be looking for is, are they willing to comb through the data and actually put on this, like, okay, so we did the statistics to game out, like, what is liked about this coffee and why, and how that relates to the descriptive analysis. And so for me, I think it's great change, but it's in the hands of people who they have to manage it responsibly. And yeah. I want to keep an eye on this and going forward, like some of these criticisms will be more valid if SCA fumbles it and less valid if SCA manages it well, which, hey, you're the premier professional organization in our industry. Like, do your freaking job.
Yeah. Well, that's a good note to close out on, isn't it?
Do your freaking job.
I feel
Chris.
Like you need a mic drop. Do we have a mic drop on the board? Maybe. I don't know.
Stop whining.
Oh, Aaron, where can people find your photography and other things you're doing?
AaronPascucci.com and on Instagram as Aaron Pascucci. You'll find me in the coffee shops in Rochester more than anything else.
Yeah. And Wade, where can people find more about Aporia Coffee and related places?
AporiaCoffee.com and Aporia Coffee Co. on Instagram. I remember last episode saying I was going to get more active on posting. I have a lot of plans and none of them have come to fruition yet, but you know, bear with me.
Yeah. And speaking of plans, the Lunchador Podcast Network is doing an event at the Rochester Fringe Festival on September 13th at 3:00 at the downtown branch of the public library. We're really excited to be doing that. If you tune into Just Can't Not or some of the other shows on the network. You'll also see a lot of Fringe previews that are happening now and roughly around the time where this is coming out, maybe a little bit before. But interesting time to listen to stuff like that. And if you want to hear other perspectives from people in the coffee side of things, we mentioned Rory Van Grohl from Ugly Duck Coffee. He has a new podcast on the Lunch at Our Podcast Network called Common Thread, where he talks about how hardcore music has affected his life and talking to other people, along with his the host, Greg Benoit from the Rhonda Coit Public Library. I gotta say, I've been really enjoying listening to it. You're going to learn more about a guy you might have known for a long time in the coffee shop. You're going to learn a lot more about him as a person, too. It's really a great listen. I highly recommend you check that out. And on that note, we're going to close out this episode of
Dialed In.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.
My new wrestling name is going to be The Main Body, built on blueberries, lobster rolls, and a fantastic accent that I definitely don't have.